Hey, you can get started anytime.
All right. Hello everyone, my name is Leonardo Marble and today I'm going to be presenting our new key value store, non-volatile memory key value store, which is the collaboration work with Swami and Nisha as well as my advisor Ryu. So today's talk is going to be mainly about key value stores and flash storage, specifically about key value store for flash storage. So let's start by introducing, giving a little bit of background about key value stores. So over time, they have become the preferred data management solution for internet services. And the main reason for this is that they provide fairly good performance and they're very simple to use, providing interface like get, put, and delete. But when compared to the traditional relational database systems, key value store provide a weaker consistency model. And this is a relevant point to keep in mind. Now, some of the limitations of existing solutions for specifically flash storage is the fact that they use some form of log structure or address place updates. And the reason they do this is because the characteristic of SSDs that you typically have to write out of place to get better performance. Now, a direct consequence of this approach requires that they also have to provide some logic for compaction or garbage collection, a way to reclaim space back in the device. And there's some negative consequences that come with this, like write amplification, which have the performance penalties as well as reducing the life expectancy of the NAND flash. Now, you might be asking yourself, how bad is this? So we did some tests on LevelDB, which is a key value store by Google, that implements a very interesting approach for logging. And what we did was use its own benchmark. We configured to have two different workloads, basically the same workload but different sizes, 1 gigabyte and 4 gigabytes, and we measure how much data gets to the block device. So we have several configurations. We have basically random writes, random write synchronous, sequential writes, and sequential writes synchronous. And so we see that even though the size of the amount of data that we put in the storage is just 1 and 4 gigabytes. The amount of data that gets the block storage, you see that in the worst case it gets 43x more data than what we internally start when we try to put in the storage. Now, to be fair, this is not a problem that is specific to LevelDB. Basically, any application or even file system that uses this approach of putting a log on top of flash devices suffer from this problem. And there's a very interesting paper that's called "Don't Start Your Log on My Log" that does a very interesting analysis and studies of this problem. Now, to better understand this problem and where it's coming from, it makes sense to take a closer look at how key value stores are designed. So a typical key value store looks like this. You have an application that talks to the key value store, and they will have at least 3 main components, typically more than that, but the ones that we're going to focus on today are these 3. They have to provide some form of logging, which allows them to do the out-of-place writing. And because they do this, they have to provide also some way to map the data, so you need to know where the most up-to-date data is at every given point. And as we said before, the consequence of this is that you also have to have a mechanism to either compact or garbage collect to reclaim space. Now, if we take a closer look to the FTL, which is that software layer that makes SSD storage look like a block device, well, we find that they have a lot of the same functionality. In particular, they also have to provide logging because most FTLs, if not all of them, they use the structured log updates. So because of that, they also have data mapping and typically garbage collection. So from this diagram, we can see clearly that there is a lot of duplication of effort here. And definitely, we want to avoid that. of the situation. Well, basically, what we propose is to have a solution that cooperates with FTL. And the way we achieve that is by basically modifying the standard interface that typically provides just a read and write and trim interface with an extended interface that allows to tap into the already built-in functionality of the FTL. Now, in our particular case, since what we care this talk is about the our key value store, we also want to make some changes to the data mapping, so that as opposed to be a one-to-one mapping, we want to have a sparse data map. So the way to think about this is a good example of this is what you have in memory. Typically, you have some amount of gigabytes in memory, physical memory, but this gets virtualized and you get, and the process has your space application is much larger than that. So this is also a sparse mapping between virtual memory and physical memory. So something like that we have now for storage. So by doing that, we can basically reduce the size of our key value store to a simple hashing scheme, which makes the key value store a lot smaller, easier to implement, which gets the application closer to the FTL, and everybody enjoys a better performance. Now, this new approach, which we call competitive design with the fast transition layer, has many benefits, including minimizing the RAM application, maximizing the application performance, leverage some nice properties that could be built in the fast transition layer, like atomic updates. And because we use a simple schema of just hashing, we can reduce the amount of metadata that we need in memory. We get better performance, push very close to the right performance, and we provide greater parallelism because our implementation uses lossless locks. Now, let's take a look at how it looks. At a high level, our design looks like this. So we have the user state library that applications can link to it to use our key value store. And remember that this key value store is specifically designed for flash. So what we see is that we export like any other key value store, an interface that allows you to good get puts and delays, a few other things. And it's a key value store that doesn't use a file system, meaning that it will manage directly the SSD. And in particular, it wants an SSD that has a sparse block address. Now, to do that, we require an interface that, as we mentioned before, besides exporting the deletion and read and write interface, it has a more rich interface that also allows for queries to query mappings, to do atomic writes, iterations, and horizons that we will discuss later. Now, if you guys are interested in better understanding how you can turn a traditional FTL that doesn't provide atomic writes into one that does provide atomic writes, there's a very interesting paper that does that, and you should definitely take a look at it. It's this one that we're using, but I'm citing it, the Beyond Block IO, rethinking traditional storage primitive. Now, our interface has basically, there are three main categories. You have management that provides you, that allows you to open and create and process and destroy. And of course, we have the basic operations like get, put, and delete, so to allow you to fetch and store data and deliver what you no longer want. But we also provide batch operations. So you can basically fetch or store multiple key value pairs atomically. This is a very nice property. So here we have a call fragment that gives you an idea of how we use this library. So typically we go and open the device that we want to use. Remember this device is the flash device. So you get a file descriptor that then you use to open. By open we also create the key value store if necessary. And then after that we simply use typical interface put, exist, and get an ATM, we close it. Nothing really that exciting here. Very straightforward, very easy to use. For a full description of the API, how they work, I suggest you go and read the paper. Now, to get a better understanding of how we perform IO in this particular key value store, let's take a look at a put example. So at a very high level, a put operation is basically, you basically hash. We get hash using the key. We get an LBA, which is basically an address in this sparse address for the And then we simply write atomic to that address. But at a high level, that's all we do. But of course, it's a little bit more complicated than that because we have to handle collisions. So what typically happens is that you get, when a put key station, the user passes the key and the value that it wants to store. So we have some threshold that we check, and then we hash using that counter that we use initialize. After we hash and we get an LDA, you basically check if there's any mapping for that logical block address, meaning that do I have anything already stored in the device? At this point, of course, you will get two answers. In the case that is yes, you basically go back into the loop, iterate your counter, and you hash again in order to get a new address. Of course, you should do this indefinitely. There's a maximum number of times that you check that. And once you do that, you basically say that you failed because you no longer couldn't find a place to store the new data. If not, if everything goes well and there's nothing there, you simply go and write atomically the data into that logical address. A couple of things that I want to say about this. Failing basically means that you try multiple hashes and at every point there was something there, which allows us to say with high level of probability that the device is full. We have noted that in practice, the polynomial proving for the hashing works very good. And another interesting thing is that the call to check of the mapping, if there's mapping there, doesn't require any I/O, so it's very, very efficient. It's an in-memory operation. Of course, the XSYS, as well as the atomic writes, is part of this extended FTL interface that we are talking about here. Now, so far with this approach, there's one important limitation that we have. Since our key value store uses the block device directly, doesn't provide a lot of room to create multiple key value stores. Of course, you could go to the approach in which you could create multiple block devices based on the same physical hardware, but that approach doesn't scale very well. We have a much better solution, which we call pools. At a very high level, you can think of a pool as a set of unique key value pairs that share some pool ID. So on the right, we see this diagram. It's kind of a Venn diagram that allows us to better understand what we mean by this. So we have three different pools, each one with different number of key value pairs. And some of them allow the same key value to be in different pools, as is the case of the key 1, which is in both pool 1, pool 3, and the case of key 2, which is in both pool 1 and pool 2. Now, by introducing this concept of pools, we basically try to solve this problem of allowing multiple key value stores on the same physical device. So applications can create multiple pools, and with this we can provide isolation. So the goal is to provide a solution that without using any memory metadata. So to do that, we opted to basically make it part of the hashing scheme in such a way that it doesn't have any impact on the IO operation, meaning that we want to stick to the approach that has only one IO per operation. And of course, by introducing this notion of pools, we also have to update the API so that now, besides the key and the value, you also have to introduce the pool ID so that you can uniquely identify a key value pair by its key and its pool ID. So how does it work? How does it affect the hashing scheme once we have pools? So let's first define this number S, which is the number of bits needed to address the entire Spark address space. Remember that this is much bigger, typically several orders of magnitude bigger than the actual capacity of the device. Once again, we have to keep in mind that now we identify uniquely every key value pair using both the key and the pool ID, which here we refer as the PID. So initially we were just using the hash. So we hash the key and that will give you the LBE. But now that we have pools, let's say that we, as before, we hash the key. And the hash of the key we're gonna call is aged subkey, so K. But we do it so that the length of this string of bits of 0 and 1 is gonna be strictly smaller than the number of bits that is needed to address the whole thing. Now, the direct consequence of this is that now this number N will determine how many unique key values we can store in storage now. And of course, the difference between S and N will determine how big each key value pair can be. So we, in addition to the key, we also hash the pool ID in such a way that the amount of bits that we use in the hash is exactly less, one less than the difference between S and N. Then we can build an LBA by simply concatenating the hash of the key, adding a padding bit, which is always zero, and the hash of the pool ID. So basically, it looks something like this. We have an LBA that has a total of S bits, each one represented by this letter B, and each one of them can be 0 or 1. The less significant ones, the M less significant ones, are the ones composed by the hash of the pool ID, and the N most significant ones are those composed by hashing the key. So the way this looks in memory, it's something like this. So as before, we have the spatial space, which is typically much larger than the actual storage. And here we have the NAND flash. Of course, doing the mapping between both of them is the ideal mapping. So we have here that each one of the settings is a fixed size, and then color blocks, blue, red, and green, is the actual data that is stored at that logical address. Notice that even though there's some space left in the sparse address, this space does not translate into wasted space on the device because the mapping guarantees that all space is used. If we take a closer look at one of these particular segments, we see that they all have an offset. This is a direct consequence of this padding bit. By putting this padding bit, we don't allow the maximum size of the value pair to grow as big as the entire segment. And the reason why we do that is that we want to have always a gap in between two consecutive data stored in logical address. So the offset that is always present basically is used to determine the pool ID of that key value pair. And the size of the segment will be equal to 2 to the n. Remember that n is the length of the number of bits used in the hash of the key, times the number of the size of the sector. And as we said, as I mentioned before, the padding keys, what the padding bit allows is to have always guarantee a gap between two contiguous segments in the logical space. Now, in addition to pools, we also added a read-only cache to the key value. And basically what it allows to do is to improve the performance of reads. This cache is only a read-only cache. But we also have what we call a collision cache, which is typically used to avoid the multiple hashes and reading to make sure that when you're doing a get, to make sure that the data that you're requesting is actually what you have. This is only used to reduce the number of IOs that you have to do when you have real collisions. Of course, in the interest of time, I won't give more detail about this, but you can go ahead and look at the paper if you're interested. So let's take a look at some of the performance numbers that we have. So one of the first tests that we ran was basically comparing the effectiveness of our pool implementation. So in order to do this, we basically compared how the performance scales as we increase the number of pools, and we compare it against level limit. Now, level limit doesn't have a notion of pools, but unlike our key value store, level limit uses a file system. So what we're doing here is comparing a single instance of our key value store using multiple pools with many instances of level limit. So let's focus on the two red lines. Notice that the one with circles is the one for key value store, which is true for every other line, and the one with the triangles is the one for level limit. So the two red lines are describing the throughput, meaning that better is more, unless it's worse, of both our key value store and level limit. I'm up to about 32 pools slash instances. The performance of level DB is self-competitive to that of the performance of our key value store, self-competitive to that of level DB. And what about this is that in this particular experiment, LevelDB is not using any caching. Remember, LevelDB doesn't use a file system. And in this particular experiment, it was configured to use no cache. So it doesn't benefit from some cache, and it doesn't benefit from the built-in cache of file systems. So even without a cache, we can achieve a very good performance compared to LevelDB, which is enjoying its own cache and the cache of the file system. Now, in the case of the write, story changes completely, so we have to compare the two blue lines. Of course, here you basically see only one, because the actual synchronous write blue line for LevelDB is not even in the picture. So to make things a little bit more fair, let's compare our write performance with the asynchronous write of LevelDB, which is the green line. So we're comparing now the blue line and the green line. So even without any benefit from the cache, and doing everything automatically, we get a much better performance than LevelDB, which I think is very essential. Now, the second test that we ran was also comparing with LevelDB using the YCFD benchmark. So here, what we have is that this is supposed to be workloads that represent workloads of production key value systems. So the way YCSB works is that it has basically two phases. You have a loading phase in which you populate your key value, and then you have an execution phase in which you can execute different workloads. So what we have here in the upper left corner is the loading phase. And here, what we're seeing in this graph is basically how both LevelDB and our key value store improve their throughput as a function of the size of the cache. So the red line is that of LevelDB. The green and blue lines are those of our key value store. We have two particular lines because in the case of the green, we don't use our collision cache, it's completely disabled. And in the case of the blue line, we enable the collision cache and we make it equal to 64 megabytes. So in the case of the low, we see that in both configurations, we outperform LevelDB by a significant margin. But for some particular reason, enabling the collision cache does have some penalty associated to it. Now, once we move to the execution phase, one of the workloads basically performs a 50% read, 50% write workload. And we see that in this particular workload, again, in both configurations, we have performed LevelDB, but the collision cache has a significant impact in the performance, a positive impact. Once we move to workloads that are more read-oriented, you see that the impact of the collision cache is not that great so much. But still, in some cases, we still benefit from it. In a workload that is 100% read, then the performance with or without the read cache is the same. Now, in the case of the relays, this is a very interesting workload because it is supposed to mimic the behavior of social networks in which you post an update and then after that it's followed by many other reads. We see that again we outperform LevelDB by a significant margin, but the impact of the collision cache is not that great. Still, having some read cache, does have a benefit. Now the latest one is a workload that performs a read, modify, write workload, and then again it is more write intensive. So we see once again that it does benefit from increasing the size of the read cache, and it benefits significantly from improving the collision cache size as well. So, in summary, what we are trying to propose, what we're proposing is basically a design that instead of being flash optimized, is FTL optimized. It allows for cooperation of the built-in functionality of a typical FTL. That allows to write a very simple key value store with very simple implementation, which require constant amount of metadata independent of the amount of key value pairs that we have. It provides a very low overhead solution for the isolation of keys by using the concept of pools, high performance and high parallelism, as we showed in some of the experiments, and provides atomic availability on every key value operation with very low RAM duplication. Having said that, I'm happy to take any questions.
This was, I'll tell you exactly what it was.
I can barely hear you.
So this was 25 minutes.
Ooh, so I went over by 5 minutes.
Yes.
That's
quite a bit over, and and I'm also recording, so that'll help too.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so maybe we can start with Hector. Yes. Please, and speak louder.
Hi Leo, how are you? This
good,
is Hector.
Yourself?
Good. Actually, I don't have too many, I don't have questions, technical questions from your work.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I guess it's a good thing because you explained yourself very clearly. Even when I don't have much experience with this kind of work, it was clear to me what you were doing. And you showed the difference with good differentiation between the different solutions you have or the different problems you're tackling with your work. So I think that's basically fine. I have comments from the presentation, but maybe we can go to the questions first of your work.
Yeah, the technical questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Atta?
Hi Leo, nice presentation. I have a question about the amplification. At the beginning, when you were motivating the problem, you showed that there's a right amplification for level dB, like 44 times the intended right. Do you have any numbers for NVMKB? How much right amplification occur for NVMKB? Or
I
is
do.
There?
Oh. I do have it, and as of now, I have it as a backup slide, which is. Am I still sharing the screen?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the backup slide for right amplification. So I don't know if it's a good idea to have this as a backup slide. Now I think this is it would be a very to predict follow up question.
Yeah, I think it's good to have that as a backup slide because you already have to cut material from your May primary presentation.
Right.
And
so if I can
just pull up the slide. If there is a question, just pull up whatever backup slide you need and start answering the question.
Right. So I have this one for about replication, and I also have, what is it? Oh, hold on, my computer goes slow, and I have also this one, in which we compare level DB and our library. And
I
see that we have a much lower amplification.
I would say, yeah, use this one, the simpler one.
Right. So I deliberately left that out because I think, I don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
And it's a very easy question to answer.
Yes. Yes. I think it would be good to say that that you're right, the NVMKB's right amplification is really low. And one way to say, I don't know if you say it explicitly, is that one I/O per operation for both reads and writes. One disk level I/O per operation.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any other question, Atta?
No, I don't have. I have some comments, but I'll wait for later.
And it would also be good to say why that is one I/O per operation, just to remind whoever is asking this question, because all user level accesses get converted into hashing operations and directly get converted into access operations at the disk level based on what the hash function tells you is the location of the data.
Yes, that's basically the main reason why we reduce the RAM amplification is because we don't write out of place, there's no mapping, there's no compaction or garbage collection mechanism.
Yeah.
If you hash and write.
Right, exactly. I think the point I'm trying to make is that the audience may not be with you throughout the presentation. They may zone in and out, and then there may be questions because someone in the audience didn't catch or wasn't paying attention when you were actually talking about it, although you might have said it during the presentation, it is still worth repeating yourself if there is an explicit question about a specific piece of material.
Right.
Yeah. Stephen.
Really have anything technical, but
you gotta come closer to the microphone.
Hey Leo, just out of curiosity, is there it's a key value store, so I guess okay, never mind. I don't really have any technical questions. All mine are pretty much little bits about the presentation. I think I might have, actually.
But go ahead and ask it anyway, because someone might not have be able to answer the question.
It was a question about what would happen when you discover that the device was full, and I just thought about it, and I was like, well, it's a key value store. You want to keep everything in there. And if I guess if you get a delete, you would delete it from the hash table as accordingly. So I answered my own question in my head. So yeah.
So you can, in other words, you don't have any wasted space because of the hashing scheme.
Could you get closer to the microphone? I don't hear you very well.
Can you ask your question again so he knows what question it is?
I think he was talking about when you were just speaking. He couldn't hear you very well.
Okay. So Stephen's question, as I understand it, is about, okay, what happens when the device is full?
Right.
So how would you answer that question?
Because what happens when the device is full? Well, at that point, you basically, there's no room for new data.
Yeah.
So you basically have to decide if the new data is more important than the old one, and if you're willing to replace it or not.
So if you have to replace it, you have to delete old key value pairs and then you'll be able to add new ones. And
right.
Then, and in other words, the key value store is I guess in some space conserving, because it doesn't have any space wastage because of the hash function, because someone might be inclined to think because of the sparse address space somehow more space is required than the amount of data that is being stored, and I think it might be useful to point out that is not the case.
Yeah, I think I try to emphasize that a little bit, not too much, saying multiple times that this is in a sparse address, which is orders of magnitude bigger than the actual size of the device.
Right.
But still, I expect that question to show up too.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's an easy one to answer.
Yep. Deleting a key value pair actually physically deletes it from the device also in this NVM KV store.
Yes.
Right. Humberto, you missed most of it, yeah. But do you have any obvious questions to ask?
I don't know exactly.
Okay. Daniel, Umberto came in much later than everyone else, so he caught maybe the last 5 minutes of the talk. Daniel, on the Skype call, do you have any technical questions?
Well, it was actually quite a bit hard for me to understand from here. I guess the voice was getting too much echo. But from what I heard, I think I understand most of it. So I guess I don't have any questions.
Don't have any technical questions. Okay, good. So Leo, I think people may have other comments, and they'll send you via email. And I have a bunch of comments in email that I'll send it to you as well. The key task is to reduce the time consumption, because you have 5 minutes over, right? And you have only 20 minutes, I checked. So I think the initial motivation and all that was really good, and I don't think you should cut too much there. But one thing which you could possibly do is that there's one, you could, where you spent quite a bit of time talking about the the results were, I think, slide 18. Right, in slide 18.
What do you think about spending less time on this slide? Because I think by the time I'm done with this one, most of what I want to say, it's clear.
I agree.
So
you can
restating it here.
Yeah, you take it out. I agree, you can take it out. The other thing is that where you talk, if you go into the design part, there is one slide which is a little bit too complicated. Go to the next one.
This one?
Not this one. The next one. Not this one. The next one. No, the next one. Next one. Yeah, this one. This one.
It's too complicated?
It's too complicated. You should remove this. You don't need it.
Well, this was my idea.
If you can combine the slide 13 and 14 together and use less time and more graphics, I think that would be ideal.
So this is what I was thinking. It seems to me easier to explain this hashing scheme from a more perhaps mathematical point of view, which is the approach that I use here. But then what I'm doing with these slides is basically have a visual representation of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I think
I don't want to get rid of it, but perhaps I do have to improve, reduce the time that I spend here. So this is basically how it looks.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time on slide 14.
This is a slide 14, okay, so reduce.
But I would say you can leave this detail for the audience to figure out from the paper, because there's the padding and all that. The details there are require quite a bit of knowledge about the key values, the NVM KV store, right? And I think you can leave out this detail and say that besides this, there are other optimizations that we do to ensure that I think the padding is used mainly to automatically extract the size of the value or something like that, right? You could say those things if you want in the presentation and point the listener to the paper. But going into this detail, I feel, I have two problems. One is it's too detailed, so the audience may lose you. And second, you also spend a lot of time actually talking about it and describing
right.
it.
Right. Do you think that this slide, including this final diagram,
I think that's good. Yeah, hashing with pools, you address that. So I think that's good. That's good enough. And then you can stop there and not have the next slide.
All right.
Yeah, I would say remove slide 14 altogether. And then there is one more slide later on in the evaluation, which I was going to have some suggestion, because you spent at least 2 minutes in that slide.
On the evaluation.
Yeah, in the evaluation.
Which one? This one?
The next one. Yeah, that one. And so, first of all, you need to make the figures visible. The x and y axes are too dull, and so on, and the labels are missing. But more importantly, I think you shouldn't be talking about all the six plots. You should pick maybe one or two, and just talk about that and say that there are YCSB has other workloads, and we talk about the other workloads in the paper, but the general summary of those findings is X, Y, and Z, and you stop there. Right? Because
so
otherwise,
you're suggesting that I basically talk here about only two workloads?
Yeah, you pick two of the workloads and just present those two plots, and the plots will also be much bigger and easier to read. I was going to say that the fonts somehow are too dim or too light. Maybe it's because of the Skype, but also the size is an issue. The font size is an issue. So
what about picking the 50-50 and the read-only?
Whatever is the easiest to explain, take less time. Those are the ones you pick.
Okay.
Yeah, because you don't have time.
Yeah, this one is also very intense. There's a lot of things going on here.
Yeah. That took a lot of time too, I think. One thing which I would say is that use animations if possible. So you bring lines one by one only as you talk about them.
That's a good idea.
Because then because it's very, otherwise very difficult for the audience to kind of switch between the lines. After you talk about each line, then you, at the end, you can bring up all the lines together if you want to make a point of comparison.
Right.
And it will be useful to have annotations to say, you know, point out how much difference is there in terms of percentage or something like that, which helps to drive home the key message of the plot. It'll be easier for the audience than to remember it.
Okay.
So use that animation, point out how much performance difference there is. What I mean is animated annotations. That's what I really mean. Where you say, okay, here is the performance difference, and animation of the individual lines would be very useful, where you bring in only one line at a time and talk about that line, and then you bring in the next line and then you talk about it, instead of having all the lines in the presentation at the same time. And the audience has to do a lot more work.
Right. So maybe have just a line for reads and then just a line for writes.
Exactly.
That's it. That makes sense. Alright, I think that should make things a lot simpler to explain.
Yeah.
It
yes.
does take a little bit of time to explain the setup because multiple pools and multiple instances and all that nonsense.
Yeah, but I think it's important that you talk about them, right? I mean, if you do not describe at least a little bit what the experiment that you ran and how you ran it, the results are not as valuable.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, let's see. What else do I have here? Right, so you know which slides you want to get rid of.
Yes, what I have in my notes is maybe reduce the time of slide for thing, or perhaps consider removing altogether.
Yeah.
Animating slide 17 and showing only 2+ on slide 18.
Yeah, I think you presented it overall. It was really good. If you had 25 minutes, I would say do exactly what you did. But since you don't have 25 minutes, you have to make changes.
Right. And also, this new approach thing, right? It's basically, it's gone. This is slide 7. Slide 7, gone.
Yeah.
Alright.
The other thing which I wanted to say is maybe it might be a good idea to touch upon the discussion a little bit in the paper, which is, you know, whether key value stores can benefit from the asset properties.
Right.
And you can maybe you can just say that, well, in the conclusion slide you can make it a little bit more explicit to say that, well, in the past key value stores have been built with the assumption that you have to sacrifice consistency for performance. Here we show that you can actually get much of the asset properties of conventional databases in key value stores, at least in the case of a single node store, and yet have excellent performance, right? I think that's one of the points of this paper, which we should bring up in the conclusion.
Right.
So you could think about how that changes your bullets in the conclusion, so that you can include that message. Yes, I think the motivation is really good, and so you don't have to make too many changes there, or any changes there at all.
Right. Right. Do you think that the idea of explaining how things work with the outputs and then showing, hey, there's a problem here, this is how we solve it. This is basically how the whole source code evolves as well. I think it's easy to understand it like that.
Yeah, the one thing that we haven't yet, you know, that's also the comments from the reviewers is the space wastage. You need to have a good answer for that. We answer it in the paper, right? Where you have, if you have small key value pairs which are smaller than the size of a block or a page, then you have this internal fragmentation that wastes space, right?
Yes.
So I think you need to have a good answer for that. I think you, so do you, have you thought about a response there? I think we should say pretty much the same thing as what we say in the paper.
Right, I think the answer is along the lines of, first of all, this only affects workloads that use this small, very small key value pairs. But if that is the case, there are solutions available like using compaction and things like that, that could basically solve this problem. We don't have that as of now.
So point out the silt work explicitly.
Yes.
The silt work explicitly. There's been some work on packing KV pairs so that you into smaller KV pairs and into larger blocks, and we could reuse some of that work in this and do some sort of a hierarchical hashing, I don't know, hierarchical storage, where blocks are hashed, but within each block you could have additional, you know, multiple KV pairs stored. That's basically the, and it would be good to, you know, just read through the silt idea a little bit so that you have a more informed answer.
Right. Yeah, I think a similar approach is also using in level 3, right? Things, as things get colder and colder, they move to a different level in which they're, I don't know if the compaction also changes, but I don't know.
Yeah. So level DB is different, right? It's not directly applicable because it does out of place writes. I think silt does the same thing as well, out of place writes, but it is more explicit in how it. I think it's similar to level DB in many ways. But it would be good to see, you know, point out to both silt and level DB because they both do packing of some kind.
Right.
Also read the paper. So I think overall this is really good what you have, and now it's just a matter of figuring out how to, you know, reduce the amount of time you require and maybe making some cosmetic changes for the content.
Right.
Then it'll be done, and I'll send you by email my feedback, which are, you know, per slide feedback.
All right. I noticed that I sent an email to Nishan Swami.
Yes.
Hopefully they'll get back to me, and we can arrange some time.
Yeah, it would be good if you can do a practice talk at SanDisk, and I think that would serve as your second practice talk as well, which would be very helpful.
Alright.
Okay. Any other comments for Leo?
I would just like to say that from what I heard, he seems to be very fluent and to have a very good delivery of the contents.
Yes.
So that's good. Apart from the excess of time, I think it was a very good presentation.
Yep, I agree completely. Hector?
I really like the way Leo talked. I think he has a great pace while talking. You were very clear. You never, like, were stepping on your feet. sometimes it happens that.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that with you. At the beginning of the talk, a small detail, I think you mentioned Swami's name. You said Swami.
Yeah. I had that. Yeah. Well, you should say the full names and also the institution names.
Right.
The affiliations.
I think saying Swami's name completely is gonna take like half a minute.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But so such is life.
And I thought that Hispanic names were long. I know.
Could you go to the slide number 4, Leo, please?
Sure.
Right. In this slide, I just what gave me a little bit of noise was that the graph was in chops, you know, broken down.
Yeah.
But then you later presented another graph, and then I kept it better. But I don't know if that's the other thing there. I think you can have a better in some slides. You can have a better real estate use and or manage of the slide.
Mm.
I think that maybe the fonts are too small.
Yeah.
You can put it a little bigger.
In this slide, fonts are too small.
Maybe
the box at the bottom.
In the bottom. Yes.
Yeah, it's the box at the bottom.
I see.
Okay. Then on slide 14, I think that's the one you might remove. Yes.
Yeah. So exactly.
But I think that
it.
If you don't want to remove it, maybe animating it a little bit more could be useful.
I don't think he has an option to keep it at this point,
right?
Because he spent a lot of time and he doesn't have time.
Yes. And on the slide 17, I think you could also put you should change the color scheme. I wasn't too able to distinguish between level DB R and NVM KVR.
So one of my comments was to make the lines much, much thicker than they are in each plot. So I think this is maybe 0.2, you should have 0.4, or at least 0.3.
Right. Well, if I do plan to do the animation, so I show only the ones for reads and then only the one for writes, that should help people better follow the discussion.
But even so, I think you should make the lines thicker, because there'll be people who don't have very good vision in the audience, and they will appreciate that you made the lines thicker.
Sure.
Yes, and in the 18, well, I also agree with Professor Rayu. There's fonts were too small, and in the next one.
Yes.
And you
yes.
can also have the yes. If you have 6 there, you have I think a blank space at the bottom and at the right, and there I think that the y-axis is different, the scale.
Mm.
So everything seems similar when it might not be similar. Besides that, I think those are my comments.
Yeah, I think here it was the experiment itself was not set up. You didn't have enough time to set up the experiment, because this is the cache sensitivity study, right?
Yes.
So yeah, the x-axis label was missing. So I think it would be good to just pick 2 plots and have all the information in the slide itself. So that if someone didn't catch the time, I mean, one thing you should be prepared for is to not expect people to be listening to you all the time. And therefore, it's important to have the key stuff in the slide as well. Such as the x-axis label.
Okay. Yeah, it's also good for as a reminder for myself.
Yeah.
Any other comments for Leo? You had to come closer, Ratha.
Leo, can you go to slide 10?
Slide 10.
I don't know what you are you trying to write best operation or bashed operation? The bashed.
Oh yeah, that should be batch.
Yeah, it should end on ed. Yes.
B A T C H. Yeah.
Yes. T C H. Yes.
B A T C H. Yeah. I completely missed that. Good catch. Yeah.
No, I was thinking that maybe I didn't know that
bird,
that
bear. Instead of SH, it should be TC.
Yes, I thought batch. I
didn't see that at all.
Wow.
Did you see that?
I didn't know, so.
It should be
wrong.
Batch.
So, we mean like this, right?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Everywhere, exactly. And I don't know if it is batched ed is there, batched get or batch get. You have to look at the API and the paper so you're consistent.
Yeah, there's a table for the API.
Yeah. So just reuse that.
Okay.
Yeah.
API, here it is. Yes, no ed.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, so that you can fix. And you have, at the top level, you also have bashed operations. Should be batch operations, yeah. Exactly. Okay, so any further comments? Steven?
Leo, can you go to slide 13, I think it's on?
13.
13, yeah.
13, yes.
The first smaller bullet point.
This one?
You say identify, I think identified is...
Identified.
More correct, yeah. It's too small.
So you mean in past participle?
So...
IED?
Yes, IED,
yeah.
Correct.
IED.
Right. This thing is always a pain.
Sorry.
Okay. Anything else? Going once, twice. Alright, gone. So that's it, Leo, you're done.
Alright,
I'll send
thank
you the.
Thank you all for spending time with me.
You're welcome. Leo, I'll send you the audio recording. It might be, some parts of it might be feeble, so you may need a headphone. But you have it.
Alright.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Daniel, too. I'm gonna hang up now. How's everything else with you, Daniel?